thank you for joining us on this week's CMDA Matters program. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, the CEO of CMDA. Well, as many of us in healthcare hunker down at home and shelter in place, many of you out there are on the front lines battling in this national and global crisis due to the COVID-19 pandemic. I wanted to ask you, do you remember how 9/11 impacted you? Where were you and what were you doing? I can remember exactly where my wife Pam and I were on that day because we were setting up for our oldest, our son Stephen's 8th birthday party in a time zone 8 hours ahead of New York in rural Kenya. Today's interview on CMDA Matters is with Mr. Tim Gagline, who shares with us about how 9/11 impacted his life while he was working in the White House on staff with President George W. Bush at that time. Tim is now serving as the Vice President for Focus on the Family and last year wrote a book with co-author Craig Osten called American Restoration: How Faith, Family, and Personal Sacrifice Can Heal Our Nation. Well, why this interview at this time when the United States and New York City in particular have become new epicenters for cases of the coronavirus? I think that you'll find out that Tim's analysis of our culture and the need for a grassroots movement, especially in healthcare, in light of our current pandemic, could be an open door for a great American revival and its restoration. After that interview, I asked Reverend Bill Reichart, our CMDA Vice President of Campus and Community Ministries, to join me to talk about the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on campus and community ministries across the country, including New York City. He and his regional directors and support staff, together with our field staff, are doing everything they can to support students in healthcare, residents, and doctors on the front lines of this battle. But first, I want to get us started with that conversation that I had with Mr. Tim Gagline of Focus on the Family, actually before we had any idea that COVID-19 was going to dominate our lives here in the United States. So we welcome to the microphone today, Mr. Tim Gagline. And Tim is Vice President for External and Government Relations at Focus on the Family. And he's stationed in Washington, D.C., along with a good friend of mine, Jonathan Embody. Welcome. Any friend of Jonathan is a good friend of mine, Tim.
Well, Jonathan is an absolutely stellar human being. And in fact, I have lived and worked in Washington for 30 years. I've known John for more than 20 of those years, overwhelmingly, truly, genuinely, one of the best men in Washington, D.C.
Wow. That's great to hear. Thank you, Tim, from a Washington, D.C. perspective. He put it on my radar to invite you today because you've got a new book out, American Restoration: How Faith, Family, and Personal Sacrifice Can Heal Our Nation. And you co-authored that with Craig Osten.
Yes, absolutely. Craig is a fellow Christian, a fellow conservative, a person who thinks very deeply and widely about some of the most important issues of this part of the 21st century. And it was such an honor and blessing to have a co-author for our book, American Restoration. A real honor to have a man of that caliber and that integrity.
Well, Tim, before we jump into the book, your history is fascinating. We were just talking about the fact that we have a similar background. We're both Hoosiers, and in fact, we're very close in age, I believe. And so we went through central northern Indiana times together back in the 60s and 70s. And then we were both at Indiana University, you in Bloomington, me in Indianapolis. And then after that, wow, our lives were quite different. You found yourself in politics in the late 80s and eventually in the George W. Bush White House. How did that happen?
Well, I had worked for 10 years in the United States Senate for Dan Coats of Indiana. And Dan went on after his 24 years of public service in both the House and Senate to serve with incredible distinction as our ambassador to Germany and as our director of national intelligence. And when Dan Coats let me know that he was keeping his promise and term limiting himself from the U.S. Senate, I let him know at that point that I would be leaving, politics as well. I had served as his press secretary and communications manager for a decade. And in the Senate, Mike, that's about 1,000 dog years, because the days are long and the years are short. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, you're making a mistake. He said, you've spent this long at this end of Pennsylvania Avenue. You really ought to work in one presidential campaign. And I joined the George W. Bush campaign. I was part of that original campaign in Austin, Texas. George W. Bush won. And then it was to the White House, and I spent nearly 8 years there. And I look back and think to myself, where did that time go?
You were there in the White House from 2001, and then within a year or so, 9/11 happened. And Jonathan specifically wanted me to ask you, how did your life change after that terrible tragedy?
Well, in my first book called The Man in the Middle, I wrote a chapter which got a lot of attention called Lightning Out of a Clear Blue Sky. Mm. It was the most beautiful day that I had ever spent in Washington. And I had been at breakfast with a friend of mine at a well-known breakfast place just across from the White House. I came back to the White House. We were having a meeting that day with the president. President Bush was in Florida that morning. And as soon as he got back, he would be coming over to a part of the White House for a wonderful meeting with a group of Christian educators. My friend, I don't mind telling you that between the time that I got back to the White House and probably less than 45 minutes later, I have never experienced such mayhem and chaos in my life. We learned very quickly that the planes had, in fact, hit the towers in New York. We were routinely reminded that one of the planes had hit the Pentagon. And, of course, at that moment, there was a lot of speculation about whether the planes were heading, in fact, for the White House itself, where I was working. So it made an indelible impression upon me. It was the worst domestic attack in our beloved nation's history since Pearl Harbor. And most importantly, the White House staff, of which I was a member, we were determined on 9/12, the very next morning, to get to our offices. We were determined to do that, to show a bit of true grit.
Yes.
And the first meeting that I attended, I was asked to arrange the important service of prayer and remembrance at the Washington National Cathedral with Billy Graham. So in sum, that was a truly remarkable week in my life.
Well, I'm guessing that as you were growing up in Indiana and listening to Focus on the Family broadcasts like I was, you probably never imagined serving for 10 years as one of their vice presidents.
I certainly did not. Focus on the Family has been a very big part of my life, as with you, Mike, dating from childhood. I grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I was born and raised there. And every Saturday morning when Focus was still a weekly broadcast, my mother would listen to that broadcast on the air. She instilled in me these immutable, unchangeable, timeless biblical principles about the way to live, about the way to think about marriage, family, parenting, the pro-life issue, religious liberty and conscience issues, medical ethics. It was a very indelible, important broadcast. And I never could have known that all these years later that I would not only be one of the vice presidents at Focus on the Family, but be one of the vice presidents at Focus on the Family in Washington in an era in our nation's history which is being challenged as never before on the issues that we care about so deeply.
Well, it's not a surprise then for listeners that you would author a book entitled American Restoration. It doesn't surprise me a Focus on the Family VP would be focused on how we can make a difference to restore America. When did you get to the point in time with your co-author, Craig, to try to tackle this subject?
In my time at Focus on the Family, I travel a lot, whether I'm in Maine or Texas, California, Michigan, Illinois, any of our 50 states, I do a lot of speaking. And no matter where I'm at, whether it's a small group or a very large group, I mean, it can be 100 people or it can be 5,000 people. After I finish my remarks about all the issues that we care about, almost predictably in every single audience, I will have someone raise his or her hand and say the following. First, I've never been more concerned about my country than I am now. Secondly, they will say, not only am I concerned about my country, but I'm very concerned about what kind of a country I'm leaving to my children
yes.
and my grandchildren. And the third thing they will say, almost predictably, is the following, Mike, I don't know what to do. And in the course of the last 3 years, I have been doing a lot of reading across very important books, studies, research, and think tank papers on some of the 15 most important areas in our American public life that really are ripe for restoration and renewal. And thinking back to all of the thousands of people I have met while traveling and the questions that they've asked, my co-author Craig Osten and I wanted to answer an elemental question. What kind of a country do we want 50 years from now? That's a very big question.
It sure is.
And secondly, what we wanted to do was to set out a kind of blueprint to answer what people were asking for, which is, what can I do where I live, where I work, where I'm a part of my church and community, where I'm involved in my neighborhood and in my school? What can I do from my perch, no matter where I live, to help restore the country? And so we wrote this book, American Restoration, because we wanted to answer that question.
Well, it's clear from reading your book that you don't agree with the so-called Benedict option and proposed by Rod Dreher. You bring up a concept of that we need to be like little platoons and engage our culture. Talk to us about those little platoons, and especially with a focus on healthcare.
Well, I am a hopefulist by nature because I'm a Christian. I agree with St. Augustine that despair and discouragement is an absolute sin because it negates the hope of Jesus Christ. It negates the hope in an individual's life and in the life of a great nation. And Craig and I genuinely believe that the best days for America are just ahead. Rod Dreher is a friend of mine, and he's a valued friend, and he's one of our most important public intellectuals. I recommend his writing and his thinking to people all of the time. And the Benedict option, you know, has been variously debated. Some people have said that it's a clarion call for Christians to decouple from the public square, to stand down. And, you know, I'm not assigning that as the narrative of what Rod is actually saying. But what we say in American Restoration is the opposite of that, which is to say, now more than ever is the time for Christians to engage, not to disengage. This is the time for Christians to stand up, to be involved in all of the various professions, really in the various vocations, and none more so. I mean, the world that I've been in is the world of public policy, of the media, of the think tank and public policy culture emanating from Capitol Hill, the White House, you know, all the things that have informed my own vocation. But one of the areas that we focus on like a laser beam in American Restoration, and the reason that genuinely we are overwhelmingly eager for doctors, nurses, those in the healthcare profession, we are very eager for them to read our chapter simply titled Restoring Medicine and Medical Ethics. And Mike, this chapter arises from a rather shocking experience that I had at Georgetown University.
Yes.
I have a friend who is a professor there. He invited me to speak, and at the very end of the classroom, I suggested that we ought to think more about how faith and medicine go together. And one of the undergraduates there, a person of goodwill, she said to me, look, faith and politics, okay, you know, I get that. She said, but please, not a lecture on faith and medicine. They don't go together.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, you know, I have a great big regret, which is I should have asked the professor if we could continue the class, because this whole idea of faith as the underpinning ethical concern of 21st century medicine has never been more important than now. And I'm eager to overstress this, which is that if we are going to have a restoration of our great country, if we're serious about renewal and all the acts of recovery, we have got to focus more than ever before on the question of how do we restore medicine and how do we restore the body of medical ethics that absolutely underscore the way that we are to navigate in all of the years ahead. If we have any discussion, conversation, or dialogue about what we want for our country 50 or 75 or 100 years from now, Mike, and we somehow leave out this question of why medical ethics and medicine and their restoration have never been more important than now, then in my view, we are totally missing one of the fundamental pillars of the way forward.
I find it amazing that many of the bioethics greats from the past were men and women of great faith. And you spent some time telling us about Dr. Edmund Pellegrino from Georgetown. Did you know Dr. Pellegrino personally?
I did, and may I say, for those who did not know him or know of him, he was one of the truly extraordinary persons of American medicine. He was, for most of his career, deeply associated with, as president of the Yale University New Haven Medical Center, and really pioneered, Mike, for those who don't know, this whole idea of bioethics. And I think it is not overstating it to say that in the world of bioethics, even long before we were having these conversations, he saw very clearly what was ahead in the advancement of science and medicine. And so from 2005 to 2009, Pellegrino served on President Bush's Council on Bioethics, which is where I got to interact with him.
Wow.
And to know him.
It's interesting. I even have received an email from one of our members today who's a fellow, a graduate from the Pellegrino Center of Bioethics, I believe it's named now.
It is indeed. Before his appointment on President Bush's Council on Bioethics, he served as the director of Georgetown University's Kennedy Institute of Ethics here in Washington. And of course, as your person said, he was the founder of the Center for Clinical Bioethics there. And so and by the way, it was renamed in his honor.
Mm-hmm.
And so over time, I began reading some of the more than 600 published articles and chapters that he wrote in medical science, philosophy, ethics. I mean, he was a true Renaissance man. And I think he authored over 20 books. So his name is very well known, and he began teaching some of the first medical school courses in bioethics in the country. I mean, you know, we think now that as a matter of course, in medical school, this will be part of your study. But of course, relatively speaking, he was a pioneer, and the whole study of bioethics, has really grown up just in the last few years. And so, in his words, he saw medicine as a moral enterprise, and he believed that if you take away the ethical and moral dimensions, he said that you end up with a technique. I love that. I think that that's very powerful.
I love that quote, too.
Yes, more relevant, more timely than ever today. And we say in the book that Mike, from that very statement, that it's clear that he knew that ethics, which are rooted in faith, must be a part of a doctor's training. Otherwise, the doctor, we say and we believe, has actually no purpose. And there is a little, to differentiate him from an automobile mechanic who replaces or repairs aging parts.
Do our counterparts on the secular side of this equation, those who are vying for the so-called naked public square, do you think they share our great concerns about America's future, or do they actually see our current problems as maybe progressive growing pains?
Well, in the very first part of American Restoration, we quote the great poet and the great literary critic, who was really a philosopher, T.S. Eliot. And I think one of the front pieces, Mike, that we use in our book is the perfect answer to your great question. Eliot wrote, "The world is trying the experiment of attempting to form a civilized but non-Christian mentality." Eliot said the experiment will fail, but we must be very patient in awaiting its collapse. Meanwhile, redeeming the time so that the faith may be preserved alive through the dark ages before us. He concluded to renew and rebuild civilization and save the world from suicide. I mean, if that's not a remarkably prophetic comment,
yes,
written in the 20th century as to what was going to come about in the latter part of the 20th century and the early part of the 21st century, then I don't know what is. We have arrived at what Eliot saw.
Well, you end the book by quoting a mutual friend of Focus on the Family and CMDA, and that is John Stonestreet from the Colson Center for Worldview, who followed Chuck Colson. And he says, ultimately, we shouldn't be too worried and biting our nails about this possibility for restoration, because at the end of it all, it's really God's job to restore American culture. And that doesn't let us off the hook, does it? But it certainly is a good perspective that we need to be praying for God to heal our land.
I love John Stonestreet. And another great friend of mine, capitalizing, I think, as a way of saying what John says so eloquently, famously said, in the Christian life, we are not marching toward any victories. He said, we are marching from a victory. I love that. That's absolutely right. You know, it puts in perspective what our commitment is. You know, Mike, we spend an inordinate amount of time in Washington debating, arguing, dialoguing about rights. And by the way, rights are absolutely essential. But what we argue in American Restoration is that there is an equally important dialogue and conversation that is more timely and more relevant that we should be having now. Not just a discussion about rights, but a discussion about duties. What do we owe our country? What are we to do to restore and to renew and to regenerate this truly exceptional, incredible country? And we believe very firmly that it begins with spiritual renewal, that there's never going to be the conservative equivalent of the Great Society, because this is not Washington's country, it's not Hollywood's country, it's not the financial district of New York's country, you know, it's not the country of Silicon Valley, it's our country. And self-government is where it begins. It begins with what Burke calls the little platoons, at the most local level, those voluntary organizations, not least of which is our churches, our families, our groups, our clubs, all the things that neighborhood and community, it will well up from there. That's where restoration needs to be seated, and that's the way we should move forward.
Well, I'm challenged. Your book challenged me. I live in a neighborhood with about 10 or 12 other houses, and the statistics hit me right, but you know, in the heart, on how well I know my neighbors and my neighborhood, and that's where I have to start. It's an incredible disconnect that, you know, we think about ministry 9,000 miles away, but just on the block, do we know people well, and are we treating them with dignity and respect and pointing them to the Savior?
I must tell you very quickly, I love what you've just said, and it reminds me of an echo of one of the greatest observations of G.K. Chesterton. He said, and he valued our home, our neighborhood, our community so much, he said, every neighborhood should have its own banner. I love that.
Well, we've run out of time, Tim. Thank you for joining us. I encourage our listeners to get your book, American Restoration. And I hope we'll get you back on this program again in the future, Tim.
I would love that. From one Hoosier to the other, thank you and God bless.
Well, when I had that conversation with Tim Gagelein, I certainly had no clue that we would be, many of us, sheltering in place within our own communities. And just this past weekend, we interacted with our neighbors probably more than we've interacted with them over the last 2 or 3 years since we moved into the neighborhood because of the mandate to stay at home and have social distancing. And walks in the park and around the block in our community had a chance to have conversations in our neighborhood about how serious these times are, but to actually share hope and a possibility of healing, and that we could get through this together as a community. I want to encourage you. Tim's book is very encouraging and hopeful. And in whatever little platoon, whether it's just your family or a neighborhood community, I think you'll find this very helpful. It's times of personal sacrifice, Tim suggests, that can heal our nation. We're getting lots of stories that are funneling in through email and phone calls from our members. You, our listeners, as you are out there interacting and sharing the hope of Jesus Christ with those that you do come in contact, even if it is in a limited social way. Our Life and Health bookstore carries Tim's book, American Restoration, and you can get a copy of it by calling us at 888-230-2637. Or you can go online at cmda.org/shop. This past week was a very busy week for our digital media and communications teams. They were very hard at work developing our coronavirus web pages. We know that there are plenty of websites out there that are providing great information. So our focus is to care for those on the front lines, those of you who are doing patient care or supporting those who are taking care of patients suffering with COVID-19. We are including tools, resources, Bible studies, as well as information from federal agencies who are implementing COVID-19 strategies. One of the most important features we want to offer is our prayer chain, prayer signup. Feel free to share with us your prayer requests. You can also list your prayer requests on our CMDA online forum so that others can pray with and for you, whatever you're facing. We also provide a daily guide for you to use as you pray as a Christian in healthcare. So many of our CMDA ministries have been turned upside down by this COVID-19 pandemic, and one of those certainly is our campus and community ministries. I want to welcome to the program our national campus and community director, Reverend Bill Reichert, for a discussion about some of the unique challenges that are being faced, but also our response to help out the various little platoons, as Tim Gagline and his co-author, Craig Osten, refer to out there in the United States among healthcare professionals. Well, Bill, this is not your first visit to CMDA Matters, but welcome back.
Thanks, Mike.
I wanted you to come join us today and be a part of a conversation because Tim Gagline promoted a concept about little platoons. And I couldn't help but, as I went back through that concept, to think about the various little platoons all across the United States, whether they're student groups or what we call local ministry groups in many different places, over 90, I believe, across the United States. Talk to us a little bit about what you're hearing, what the information that's coming to you as the director for our campus and community ministries for CMDA.
Thanks, Mike, for allowing me to share this because I am hearing a lot of stories. In fact, so many stories that I couldn't even lay them all out in our conversation together. I think we take up hours upon hours. Mm-hmm. So let me cherry pick a couple of examples because we are seeing everybody from field staff to campus advisors, student leaders, local ministry leaders, council chairs engaging in very strategic and courageous ways throughout the U.S. For instance, our student groups at Penn State Hershey are getting together online to study the Bible together. And of course, students may be a little bit more adept to the technological platforms that we're now often using. In fact, most of these examples are all about using the technology of the day, particularly Zoom online video platforms. But then there are groups like, I think of George and Angelica Gonzalez out in Fresno, California. Great local ministry group, great leadership there. And they have dived into using Zoom for the first time last week.
George is a former president of CMDA, I believe.
He is. And they've begun to connect using Zoom. So I really appreciate volunteers and local leaders like the Gonzalez's just leaning into this new technology and just kind of going after it. Our campus advisor at LSU and Tulane, Dr. Mark Del Corso, gathered students together for a kind of an online call, but it was also a Southeast gathering to hear Dr. Rick Donilon discuss the topic uncertainty, and the providence of God. And there, I think there was about 40 or 50 people on that Zoom call as well. And then even under Robin Morgenthaler's leadership, the side-by-side ministry, here we have women who are married to their husbands who are going into hospitals. They're doing all they can to hold their families together mm-hmm. and to work at integrating their husbands back into the households and all the many challenges. Well, for a couple of weeks there, when all the social distancing things were starting to kind of lay out and people weren't meeting, there was a drought. There were weeks where the side-by-side chapters, a little over 90 of them, weren't gathering. Well, they begun to re-engage through using Zoom. Mm-hmm. And many of these chapters are now connecting through Zoom. And I got a chance to kind of hear some of the conversations as they were sharing. Just, it was like fresh water again to be able to connect. Yes, it's different. It's not in a building or together side by side, but they're doing that in these online platforms. And it's just becoming a tremendous lifeblood. And then lastly, just as another example to kind of round out our discussion, New York City, the mm-hmm. hotbed right now, ground zero with all these COVID-19 cases, and it's putting a tremendous stress on our healthcare professionals. Well, we've got great volunteers. We've got Dr. David and Janet Kim out of Beacon.
At Beacon, yes.
They're doing great work with our student ministry and engaging very proactively, as well as Dr. Matt Saw, our area director there, and Dr. Paulina Kim, our council chairman for New York City CMDA. They are just... they're engaging intentionally into the lives of these healthcare professionals. And they put together a very designated time, apart from many of the other things they're doing, called Oasis. And it really is just that, Mike. It is an oasis. It's an opportunity for healthcare professionals to come together through, again, using the Zoom platform to worship. First of all, keep their eyes focused on Christ, worship together, but also a safe place for them to share their burdens, their struggles, their concerns, and then to pray for one another. And it's truly like an example of a biblical lament. They, you know, they lay out their burdens, they focus their eyes on Christ, and they come and worship Him. And so that's what they're doing in New York City, and it is becoming a tremendous lifeblood for the lives of these healthcare professionals that need to know that they're not alone in this. And so having these local communities, these local platoons, as you said, are real important for the life of our ministry and our CMDA members.
I think you've also set up on a weekly basis, is it 12 noon on Wednesdays, that people can, mm-hmm. I think it's on Facebook. Tell us a little bit about that time that you've set up.
Well, yes, it is 12 o'clock. It is 15 minutes, and it's actually on Zoom. We have a Zoom link, mm-hmm. and we had Dr. Rick Donilon give a devotional last week. We have Dr. Val Tremonti the week following. So we're lining
up. All-star lineup.
That's right. Well, and they're just a quick 10-minute devotion, just opening up the scriptures and just pointing people to Christ. And then a time to pray. We invite people to share prayer requests on the chat. And so it just is a quick opportunity to kind of hit the pause button in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, and to come together as God's people to hear from Him and to pray together.
These are just quite, quite interesting and challenging times. And Bill, what I'm hearing, I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, is that our members, our listeners are out there. They tend to be at one of two extremes. Some of them truly are being stressed and burnt out and seeing more death than they're used to, especially in those of our members who are in New York City. On the other hand, some are being infused with new meaning and life. And it's actually somehow, some of them have said, some of our executive coaches have pointed out that they're finding new meaning and purpose in medicine. Are you getting a sense of that at all?
We are getting that mixed bag. We certainly are hearing, obviously, more of the struggles. They're coming to the surface as people are laying out their burdens and sharing their prayer concerns. So the struggles are real. They're becoming even more amplified as this COVID-19 crisis continues on. But to your point, too, there is a sense of renewed purpose and energy to engage other CMDA members. We're seeing this with our student leaders, our CMDA student leaders. They're finding some of them are out of their clinical rotations, they're at home more, they're mm-hmm. finding a little mm-hmm. bit more unstructured time. They're asking us, hey, put us in the game, coach. How can we do something in this? And we're excited to be able to leverage that passion and opportunity and to have these students really step up to the plate, and in ways that historically, you know, it's just challenging because we're always covered over, we're always busy, but these students have really found a real renewed sense of purpose and passion.
Bill, I want to thank you for the work that you, the regional directors, and your area directors are doing to just sort of provide right on the spot, on-demand resources. So as I mentioned earlier, cmda.org/coronavirus and equipping to serve, I think, is the where people can go specifically for ministry.
Right. We've just put a page of opportunities to help local leaders, local ministries. How do they engage in ministry in this new online world? Giving them the tools to get online, to share. What are some of the ideas they're doing? So it's an opportunity for them to share and to learn from one another, as well as online Bible study tools that they can download or stream. So we're trying to put the tools before our members so that they can better do the work and ministry that God has called them to do.
Thanks, and may He continue to change hearts and healthcare through campus and community ministries in the midst of this COVID-19 outbreak. Thanks for joining me, Bill.
Thanks, Mike.
I love how Bill and his team are reaching so many Christians in healthcare right now through innovative technology and implementing creative ways to spread the gospel in these challenging days. To check out the helpful and timely resources that Bill and his team have put together, just go to cmda.org/coronavirus and click on Equipping to Serve. Well, in our own efforts to flatten the curve here at CMDA National Headquarters in Eastern Tennessee, we've allowed most of our staff to work from home. And by the time you hear this, it's possible we may all be working from home as the numbers of COVID-19 cases in Tennessee are climbing, just as they are in your state. I want to assure you that we are continuing to provide services to our members, but there could be delays. We remain committed to our mission of educating, encouraging, and equipping Christians in healthcare just like you in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis, all to the glory of our Heavenly Father. Just a reminder, our Washington office gets daily updates and has frequent conference calls with the White House and also with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and other federal agencies that are now implementing COVID-19 strategies. The link to those updates, you can find them on our main cmda.org/coronavirus webpage under COVID-19 resources. There you'll find daily video updates from the President's Coronavirus Task Force, official CDC guidance, and links, especially for you as healthcare professionals and for